Welcome to Chit Chat Stocks. On this show, hosts Ryan Henderson and Brett Schaefer analyze businesses and riff on the world of investing. As a quick reminder, Chit Chat Stocks is a CCM Media Group podcast. Anything discussed on Chit Chat Stocks by Ryan, Brett, or any other podcast guest is not formal advice or recommendation. Now please enjoy this episode.
All right, welcome in. We're starting the live stream, so it's always a bit awkward for the first couple of seconds here. This is Chit Chat Stocks. My name is Brett Schaefer, and as always, I am joined by Ryan Henderson. We're going live for the 101 Power Hour. It's going to be much harder to talk. Maybe we should just call it season two at this point. Episode one, but after we get to episode 100, it's very hard, at least for me, to explain it. But we're talking all things financial markets, investing, business, everything. But the most important topic this week, Ryan, did you see the Ray Dalio Taylor Swift tweet? Because I know you've been busy this morning at work.
Yeah, sorry, I've got a siren going by my place here. I did see it, and he is who we thought he was, I guess. Like, he seems kind of intoxicated in this picture. I can't believe he posted it.
He's an incredible guy, and I love his tweets for various reasons, and that's what we're going to talk about today. But first, Ryan, why don't you talk about one of our advertisers, goodoldpublic.com, which has a very urgent, not urgent, but very enticing message for the listeners.
Sure. So, Chit Chat listeners, you know public.com, but you're probably familiar with them as kind of the all-in-one investing platform. They also recently launched options trading. And if you activate them by March 31st, you can earn a lifetime rebate of 18 cents on every contract traded. That can add up to hundreds, even thousands of dollars in savings. Plus, unlike other investing platforms, Public doesn't charge commissions or per contract fees. So that's no commissions, no per contract fees, and a rebate of 18 cents on every contract traded. Discover the most cost-effective way to trade options and start getting something back on every contract, every trade. It only takes a couple of minutes to sign up at public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. Must activate options account by March 31st for revenue share. Options are not suitable for all investors and carry significant risk. Full disclosures are in the podcast description. U.S. members only. With that said, the week of finance, anything exciting, anything stand out to you, Brett?
Well, I wanted to see if you had any more thoughts on this Dalio tweet. Why don't you, I think I have the link in the show notes there if you want to pull them up. What exactly did our $100 billion man tweet out?
One sec. It's going to take me a second to pull up here. It was a photo of him at a Taylor Swift concert. For those of you that are wondering why we're so fascinated with Ray Dalio, I recommend listening to the episode we did recently, because there's a lot more going on behind the scenes, I think, in Ray Dalio's world than what a lot of people realize. Bridgewater Associates is known for just being an enormous hedge fund, but there was a recent book that was written. I can't remember the author's name, but I recommend going and checking it out. I'm going to try to pull up the picture here. Do you have the picture handy?
I maybe can, but
listeners don't care.
Yeah, but you can describe it, but you can share the screen, right?
Yeah, I'm just pulling it up. One second. Okay.
It's under his replies. Yeah. And any of the listeners, you should know that Ryan has the noisiest Apple computer they've ever made for those keyboards. But yeah. It's been bugging him for what? How many years now? Like 5 years. It's like the bane of your
existence. I know, but you keep having me pull stuff up, so it's okay. I've got a picture here.
Yeah, crazy having you pull stuff up on the podcast. Yeah.
All right. Screen share. I know this is fantastic audio. Can you see that, Brett? I can't see if you're saying yes or no, but
Hold on one sec. I was typing something in. Let's see.
Loading.
Yeah, I can see it.
Here is Ray Dalio. This is him at a Taylor Swift concert in Singapore. He says, Taylor Swift for president, exclamation mark. I just saw her at her concert in Singapore and realized that she could bring together Americans and people in most countries much better than either of the candidates, and that bringing people together is the most important thing. If I were at a Taylor Swift concert and I saw, how do I stop presenting? There we go. If I were at a Taylor Swift concert and I saw Ray Dalio behind me, just clearly intoxicated, I would, my mind would be blown. I did not expect him to be a Taylor Swift, a Swiftie, as they say, but I guess everyone is, apparently.
Yeah, I guess her music knows no, you know, it's for everyone. The 70-year-old fund manager, I actually don't know his age, but the older fund manager from Connecticut worth $20 billion to, you know, just the Gen Z millennial person, I guess. Yeah, he's appreciating greatness. But clearly, I mean, the picture is, what is he doing? What who is with him?
He's enjoying his life.
Is he by himself? All right, yeah,
if you're a billionaire, well, I don't know if I'd be going to Taylor Swift concerts in Singapore, but I would be doing whatever I wanted the same way he is. And it seems to, he seems to be enjoying it. But do we have any serious finance topics for the week? Anything in the news that you thought was noteworthy?
Well, we don't really have too much in earnings, but I have some various tweets. I have one from you about finding new ideas. I have one about Alphabet. I have one about revenue growth in technology decelerating, but the earnings ratio is going up. So I want to talk about that from a good quant investor. I have something on Costco, and then I have something from my own tweet, and I forget actually what the heck it even is. But yeah, plenty of stuff. I think we can get right into it. First, though, I'd say for anyone that's listening to the show, oh yeah, I have someone on something on IAC, which I think will be fun for both of us to talk about. But before we get into it, I would say anyone that's listening to the show, anyone that's followed us, you know, for a long time, if you haven't given us a review on Apple or Spotify, that is the best way to support the show. If you've even just listened to one of our podcasts and thought they were good, the best way to help us grow is to give one of those reviews. Also, you can listen to these on YouTube or watch, I guess, as well, on the Chit Chat Stocks YouTube channel. So go follow us there. That's where we do these live every Thursday at around 12:30 Eastern time. And then also subscribe to the Chit Chat Stocks newsletter. So Ryan, what one of these do you want to hit first? I'm up for anything.
Let's do this Costco topic. I liked this from Ian, our friend Ian Bizek, down in South America, where he runs a wonderful blog down there. It's primarily focused on South American equities, but there's other stuff as well. It's called Ian's Insider Corner. This really wasn't about that. This is more just about probably one of the highest quality businesses of all time, you could say. I think we put it in our top five moat list, if I'm not mistaken. We've both done that before. But Ian says, when Costco stock is down 40% from here, there will be a flood of think pieces about how the company lost its way, it's slipping internal culture, blah, blah. Whereas in fact, the problem was simply that folks were paying 50 times earnings for a retailer. I think that's really, well, we'll see if it drops 40%, but that is so true that price drives narratives. And in this case, that would totally be the rationale that this is not the Costco of old. And the thing that's kind of interesting is if the stock dropped 40% from here, you'd still have to believe in the culture because it's trading at 25 times earnings for a brick and mortar retailer, which is not necessarily cheap. So not even 25, 30 times earnings for a retailer. Is it trading at 50 times now?
It might be.
Man.
Is it?
Yeah, 50 times earnings for Costco. This will forever be one of those companies, I think. unless the stock really got cheap, that I support from the sidelines, that I support the culture, love the philosophy, love the management team.
They need your support over there, Ryan. But I get what you mean. You're a fan of the culture.
I'm a fan of the business. Yeah. It's I'm an active customer, and everyone loves the business. They run the it the right way, and I'll probably never own shares.
Yeah, look, it's not going to make your returns aren't going to be that good from here. It's a fact. Unless, what are they going to do? 15% comp sales for the next decade every year? Doubtful. I think you're betting here. If you're buying shares today, you're making a bet that not only will the business quality, which is already so high, it'll maintain that high quality, but you're also betting that the multiple is going to stay at somewhere near 35, 40, 45 times earnings. And sure, maybe it deserves to trade there, but look, it doesn't make any sense to buy shares at these prices. It simply doesn't. They're limited on their growth. So,
well, you're clearly not factoring in the future multiple expansion.
Yeah, and I think some people make an argument that, yeah, that's true. Yeah, they could trade at 75 times earnings. I guess that's true.
There was a time when, and I think I read this from, I believe it was Todd Wenning that posted this, but, and I'm gonna botch it, but basically the gist of it was you could have paid 30 times earnings for Costco at any time after like 2000, and you still would have beaten the market. But that was 30 times earnings. This is 50 times earnings. So we're talking about a 40% drawdown to get back to that multiple. It's really hard to earn a good return from here, which, you know what? Maybe that's fair. Maybe it deserves a, and I don't even know if it would get this high, but maybe it deserves a bond-like return.
That's what people argue. That's whenever you hear someone talk about a company turning in, yeah, like whenever you hear someone talking about a bond-like return from a stock and how it deserves to trade at that, I think that that's when the red flags go off in my head about, okay, look, this thing is a little bit dangerous, a little bit risky. There's really no pushback against the company or against the stock, not the company, but strictly the stock price. One argument I hear is that they could double their membership prices or the subscription fee you pay every year. You're a payer or maybe a user. I don't know if you're sharing one. And what is it, like $120?
I don't know. I'm a moocher. I'm a membership moocher.
I mean, yeah, they could probably double their membership price, right?
Yeah, probably.
Like bring they up could, a, but they're not going to for a long time. And yes, there is embedded pricing power here, but yeah, that's where, you know, maybe I'd get attracted to buying something at 25, 30 times earnings. But I think people get really lost in the difference between when something hits like way above the market average of an earnings ratio, especially for, you know, something that's earning normalized earnings. You know, they get to 35, 40, 45, 50, and you're like, okay, what's the big difference between 35 times and 50 times? It's both a premium valuation, and in the short run, it might not matter, but I mean, it's huge in the long run. That's a giant percent gain from multiple expansion.
Yeah. All right. Pull up another topic here real quick. I have to go silence an appliance in my kitchen here so it doesn't ruin the audio.
Okay. All right.
So let me run 1 second.
Yep. All right. The next one we have here for all the listeners and for anyone, I will remind you, you can join and ask questions. We have a few people joining the live stream each week. You can ask questions. And if you have something you want us to discuss, you'd like us to discuss, join live. All right. The next one I have here is a tweet from their dad cap. I believe the name is Dan Rasmussen. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. Great quant manager, always posting fun data. The Twitter account or X account is at @verdadcap. So at verdadcap. Has a nice screenshot. Like I said, always posting good data of comparing IT sector revenue growth and NASDAQ 100 total return. So what they're looking at here, and I'll be curious if Ryan thinks this is a chart crime, is you have IT sector revenue growth going back to January 2020. So say the start of 2020. And yeah, there was a little COVID downturn. Everyone had revenue declines during that. But if we come out from 2020, 2021, 2022, we've seen, we saw a huge acceleration in the IT sector, which I'm assuming is just tech stocks generally. And we saw revenue growth accelerate up to 16% at its peak, which is just phenomenal. And then now it's actually declined to about 0%. But at the same time, NASDAQ 100 total return is, you know, we're approaching all-time highs here. And during, you know, 2020, 2021, 2022, the returns kind of track revenue growth, but now it's kind of separated. And I'm curious what your thoughts are here. Well, actually, let me even check if Ryan's joining us again. Are you back?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. Yeah.
Okay, okay.
So this actually kind of plays into my post I had this week, which is I feel like I'm running a little dry on ideas. And I think this is part of why. It just, and maybe I'm anchoring to kind of last year's multiples, but it feels like we're kind of in no man's land right now with the market, where the valuations feel stretched. The outlook doesn't feel that good for a lot of these businesses. Growth is not what it once was. And people are willing to pay more. The time horizons seem to be extending again. And there seems to be this consensus view that interest rates are going to come down again, which maybe they will, but I don't know. I feel like I'm running in the idea. Well, I'm running a little dry right now.
Do you think this is a chart crime, or does it make sense to you?
No, this makes sense to me.
I was a little,
why do you think it'd be a chart crime?
Yeah. And I had a tweet that I guess doesn't make sense because I thought I was doing evaluation, like NASDAQ 100 PE, which I guess would kind of correlate with the chart. Because I thought, you know, people just continue to underestimate Amazon's impact once they go from 0% margins to over 10%. I would say that people don't price in the past. I guess, or there, you know what I mean? Like, this is saying there's a lot of optimism about what growth can come from in the IT sector from these new AI tools. I'd also look at perhaps the impact Apple has on here. And if you could make this chart X Apple, what does it look like? Because Apple's revenue growth has been quite weak recently. So those would be my two things. I don't think it's a chart crime. A lot of people are saying chart crime, but yeah. And
it doesn't really feel like a chart crime to me.
Nah, yeah, it's not. I think maybe it's indicative of what people are expecting in general from the tech sector. Like I said, one, the acceleration and growth from AI, but two, I'd say I think there's a lot of optimism, and I'm not sure if it's warranted or not. We'll see about efficiency gains from AI and how that can help margins and whether we can see margin expansion. We've seen some companies throw out examples of how it'll help. I'm not sure what the net cost will be, but we'll see.
But margins have contracted. It's kind of the funny thing, right? Margins across the S&P have gone kind of mean reverted a bit relative to their highs of 2020, 2021.
Yeah. So that would have been that my... is true. I'm not sure about the tech sector. We'll see. I'd say exclude Amazon from that because, again, that can really throw a wrench into the things. But yeah. I think it's forward-looking, though. They're saying margins, if we can...
I don't buy it. I'm
not trying to say this as a just a money-hungry person. They could replace a lot of jobs, right, with these IT tools or AI tools. I think that's what people are expecting. But as you mentioned, it hasn't shown up yet. So it's got to show up over the next few years.
Maybe. And yeah, but people are saying it because of AI, but the automation has been replacing jobs forever. I don't think it's really that different now. If you're talking about, oh, well, we have a chatbot for our customer support instead of actual customer support. So boom, we're saving money. It's like, okay, yeah, you also have a horrible customer support experience. And it probably leads to a trickle away of customers. So I don't know if I buy all the AI will replace significant operating expenses narrative.
Yeah. Well, I think the key for any investor is that this is getting priced in to the indices, right? So whether or not you're a believer or not, like, it's already priced in. So you're even if you expect those gains to show up, it seems priced in at this point.
Do you think that's really what's driving it?
I think it's part of the narrative. What's the AI narrative has turned into a bit of, I don't call it a bubble yet, but perhaps a bubble. We'll see in the future. It's turned to a bit of, you know, the metaverse type game, the COVID winners type game, where it's just like, it's all narrative. And I think the narrative is that, yeah, like, there's just going to be a lot of job replacement, a lot of efficiency, a lot of just growth from this AI stuff. And there's some good questions that I've seen from investors I follow, and it's how expensive all this stuff is. Which one? I guess the tech sector will benefit because it'll probably flow through to the three cloud providers. So maybe that's part of it. But when you have such an expensive undertaking where, what, they're going to spend $100 billion across the board on all these things, what's the return going to be? It's a high bar. That's all I'll say.
CapEx will rise for the rest of, what is it, the NASDAQ 100, and the cloud margins will expand for the most heavily weighted in the NASDAQ 100.
Everything flows through.
The great equalizer.
Everything flows through to the cloud. Speaking of big tech, though, have a question from someone. It says, thoughts on why Apple has declined 11% month to date? I'm not going to lie. My psychological short has been working. It's
11% month to date.
I think it's month to date, maybe year to date. Whatever it is, since over the last 3 months, it's trailed, like, it's diverged from the index, whatever one you even want to use, where the index has kept soaring and Apple has gone down, which is a big change in how things usually work or have worked since COVID. And I think it's because, one, they're not going to benefit from AI, or they're not seen as an AI winner yet, especially because they don't have a cloud service. Two, China risks continue to materialize, and we're seeing that. I think there was a number that's iPhone, it was some sort of Apple number, and China was down like 20% year over year to start 2024. So that's materializing. I would also say the Vision Pro being a flop is, right, probably hurting them. It's not going to be material. And then fourth, we're seeing the fine from the European Union and stuff finally arising on App Store anti-competitive behavior, which could potentially lead to earnings reduction. And as well, we're seeing some things that could lead to the elimination of the $20 billion payment from Google, which, added all together, I mean, could be a big earnings hit.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of reasons aside from just the multiple getting kind of more stretched than it's ever been. But there's a number of factors that have come in that don't necessarily bode well. I'd be surprised if the Vision Pro really had a whole lot to do with it, just because I don't think people were banking on that in their valuation beforehand. Like,
right,
that probably wasn't factored into. And I don't even know if this is just index flows or what, but I don't think people were baking it into their analysis that the Vision Pro is going to be worth another, whatever, what's 11% of Apple's market cap, probably $500 billion in market value, maybe a little less.
Less, maybe say a couple hundred billion, just to don't have to do that. Yeah.
Probably doesn't seem like that was involved. The, I don't know. I don't think Apple, I still think Apple is a wonderful business. but there it's really a long ways away from me ever wanting to own it. There's also been, I don't know if you mentioned this part, but the European ruling this week around the App Store.
Yeah, which, I mentioned it, but just briefly. So if you want to go in any details.
I guess I don't know what all happened that well, but it's just been a lot of negative news around Apple. And frankly, the growth rates have slowed down. The revenue growth has certainly slowed. I can pull up some, maybe this is a good time for me to pull up a chart on Apple's revenue growth rate. But yeah. Is there any world where you see yourself buying Apple?
Where would I buy Apple?
Yeah.
I think it could fit in my portfolio given that they're buyback king. But I just don't know, like, so maybe I'm over optimistic on what return rates I want in my portfolio, but my hurdle rate would be something like I aim for 15%. Maybe I'll not reach that. But if I look at Apple, 10% earnings yield, I know they'll buy back and return most of that. So I can get 10% each year from that. And I don't know how confident I would be in them growing. So yeah, maybe I could reach that 15% return hurdle. Maybe they can expand margins. But yeah, I think that's what my expectations are. And yeah, it probably deserves to trade a little bit higher. So maybe I'd also be pricing in some multiple expansion, but not sure. But yeah, where to, if we're going to hit our little ad here, Ryan, where are you getting these high quality charts?
I'm getting these high quality charts from finchat.io, the complete equity research terminal for fundamental investors. Now, so I'm looking at Apple here, and I've pulled up the total revenues dating back to 2014 through the last 12 months, and it's still compounded at 8%, a little over 8% annually. But over the last four years...
What number is that? Sorry.
The compound annual growth rate?
Oh, so yeah, what is it? Revenue or...
Yeah, sorry. Revenue here has... This is total revenue. Has compounded at 8% annually over the last 10 years. But over the last four, it's since September 2021 to the last 12 months, it's hardly up at all. And part of that might be weakness in some of the hardware, but this is also at a time when the, what's it called, services revenue has exploded. And that's the highest margin part of their business. So maybe the margin or the, it's a higher margin mix shift, but we can also pull up here, and this is a new update improvement from literally this morning, actually, it was launched. If I pull up the three-year estimates, let me switch this out real quick. Ooh. Sorry for all the clicking around. It's expected to grow 1% next year. It's expected to grow 6% the year after and 5%. The year after that, top line. So that's the revenue. I don't see why you'd want to pay, what's the valuation on this? 25 times earnings for a business that's growing the top line, maybe mid-single digits. Once again, this is one where you say, well, maybe it deserves a bond-like return. But if you ever catch yourself saying it deserves a bond-like return, just buy bonds.
Yeah, especially because my savings account right now is at 4.5%. And if you really want to buy the bonds, it can be 5%, perhaps higher. So yeah. And if you lock in 10-year yield, 10-year, it's like 4%, right? I guess I haven't checked recently. But either way, my savings account could be 4.6%. You can lock in 4% on the 10-year. Yeah, and that's very interesting that you get that just got added, you know. Stuff that
estimates.
I get that every day. Yeah, the estimate that's quite helpful. That's actually something that I was hoping that the team over there would add recently. And if you want to get a 25% discount, you can go to finchat.io/chitchat. Link right. will be in the show notes. DM us if you want the direct link to figure it out. You get 25% off any premium plan that can save you a good chunk of change. As we know, all the value investor types, we're all frugal over here. So if you want to save money, come save money and help us out along with us. Okay.
And I'll say we've had
Apple or go ahead.
We've had a number of people use the code. So if you've used it, Let us know how you're enjoying it. Right now, by the way, if you sign up, you just get 2 weeks of FinChat Pro for free. So you can trial it and see if you enjoy it. And then when you're like, oh yeah, let's do it, go ahead, use our link. Helps us, helps you. You get 25% off. So it's finchat.io/chitchat. I'll leave it there. Any other topics?
Yeah, I'll say thank you to everyone who's used the link. It does help us out. So one more thing on Apple. We have a comment here from XMarks97. This version of the Vision Pro sucks due to the size slash comfort of it. However, people who I have talked to have said it is extremely cool. Like all first-gen products, they will iterate on it. I think that's this thing that people keep saying about it is it has cool features. But the one thing I would like to know about any sort of VR product is when people use it consistently without getting sick or red eyes or having all these downsides or discomfort. So if they can be the one company to finally solve that issue, sure, I'll be optimistic on VR. But it seems like if you read every review, they say these things are interesting. However, it's just now after a month is sitting on my wherever it is. So there's a lot of progress to make here. And I it's just not going to move the needle at this size of a company. But we had another question on Alphabet, and it was actually going to be our next topic anyway. So it says, what is your view on Alphabet? Is it a longer term hold? I would say, as a full disclosure, neither of us own it, but we have owned it in the past. And one of the reasons it seems, I don't know, one of the reasons that I am not very attracted to Apple is because you can see someone like Alphabet at a much cheaper price. So we have, and maybe you can pull up quickly the earnings ratio, but had an interesting, this is perhaps one that was put out a bit as a hot take to drive, you know, people, drive some engagement. And it's from Great Account on the old X machine, Compound 248. I'll just read it off here and just interested to hear your reaction. So they say, in addition to search, the greatest business in history, Alphabet also owns its own AWS, NVIDIA, Square, OpenAI, Fiber Internet Service Provider, Microsoft Office, The Trade Desk, iOS App Store, Sequoia Capital, Netflix, Instagram, TikTok, and self-driving tech stack. Probably not a zero. Now, do you... what is your reaction to reading that? Is that an exaggeration? Do you agree with Compound here? Is this sneakily... yeah.
Well, it's kind of funny because we look at it and I constantly find myself saying, why would I own this over Google? But I don't own Google. And so it's like the one thing I can't get around, obviously it's not a zero. It's not valued like a zero. It still trades at 20 times EBIT, and it has a market cap of $1.6 trillion, so it's not a zero. Very valuable business. Search is still the toll road on the world's information and probably the widest moat of any digital business in the world. I still worry about just the corporation as a whole, the business as a whole, the unwillingness to grow margins. We talked about it last week. They will never pull a Meta. They could, but they won't.
And I hope you're jinxing them for the economy, for the market's sake. Can you pull up their margin, see what it looks like? I know you can do that real quick there.
Sure. Let's go operating margins.
Yeah, and just
so it's expanded a bit, but it's expanded by a little over 2 percentage points over the last 7 years, which, I mean, search is probably what, 70% operating margins in all honesty. Mm-hmm. It could be so profitable. This is very much a choice, and I think my big concern here is that it doesn't really feel like Sundar Pichai and the management team have that much control over the business.
Well, that might be an exaggeration, man.
I think they're afraid to make big changes.
They might
be. They don't want to do the big layoffs. They don't want to be seen as kind of the tyrant. And what kind of influence do Sergey and Larry still have? I'd be curious about that, because I saw them giving a talk in, I think it was Sergey Brin, giving a talk to Google about Gemini in just like the most bro, tech bro outfit I've ever seen. I was just like, I did not realize they are still around, like making changes at this business on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, well, Brin and Paige, I don't think is there, but Brin just came back recently for the AI stuff, which I think is good. I would fade that. I think they're going to outperform. And they've made, what would you call it, 30,000 person layoff? What is that?
Yeah, but okay, I can check the employee count. 30,
right. I mean, they're investing a lot.
You can do layoff and still expand your workforce.
So I'd look at, okay, I think margins can, if they want to, margins can expand, because right now, cloud, probably YouTube, Waymo, which gets a lot of investment, and the AI tools are holding back margins. And I think those headwinds will likely not get worse over the next couple of years. And in fact, they'll probably be a benefit to margins expansion.
Yeah, you're probably right. And there's a lot of reasons to hate Google, but I think ultimately you've got a wonderful business and the margins will expand slowly over time. Here's a testament to how impressive the core business is. In 2018, they had 98,000 employees. In 2022, they had 190,000 employees. And margins expanded.
Yeah.
They have come down a bit. You were right. Employees are down by probably about 5%.
Yeah. But
the total workforce?
Yeah. It could be so much more efficient, which is just, I think that's why people get complainy, especially if the stock is not going in the right direction, because there's $10, $20, $30 billion in savings, and it's not like you're. It's not like you're, like, these workers are going to be totally fine because you're getting paid so much. I don't know. It's yeah.
Can you guess Google's, over the last 10 years, what Alphabet has generated total return and on an annual basis? Compound annual growth rate.
10 years? So starting in 2014? Say 14%.
No, 16%.
16, pretty good. Pretty good. And the finishing multiple is quite low. What's, I think, attracts me a lot to Alphabet as something I could buy and never sell is that if it gets down to 15, 14, 13 times earnings, which is a little far away, but not too far away from here, they're consistently repurchasing stock with an unlevered balance sheet. And it's just, you can get such a good return even if the multiple doesn't go up once you get to that point where they can take down the share count by 4 or 5% a year, which just adds so much to returns over the long haul.
So why don't you own it?
Well, because it's not at, say, it's not at 15 times yet.
Yeah. I mean, it's the cheapest of big tech, probably.
But I would say got to remember, and this is what's gotten us in trouble before and gets a lot of people in trouble, is relative valuation is dangerous. On its whole, I don't think it's that cheap. I think it's,
I still don't
fairly
think
20, valued.
22, 23 times earnings. It's not
it's
that
not
bad.
Expensive. It's not expensive, but I wouldn't call it dirt cheap.
God, it's a good business. Here's the other thing that frustrates me. I already have too many companies where I listen to the conference calls and I feel inclined to turn them off halfway through. Because I just every time they report the quarterly earnings, it just irks me and it frustrates me. Google's another one of those. They might as well not have conference calls because they give zero clarity about the business, pretty much zero color. And then they'll give you one random anecdote to give you hope for a certain business. And then they never bring it up again.
Yeah, they should just post, because they, and then they'll just read off 30 or 40 minutes of what could be a letter. They should just send out a 5 to 10 page letter slash kind of slideshow thing that goes through all the KPIs they want to talk about. And if you're not going to give any other insights to the analysts asking questions and just treat them terribly, just don't do a call. You don't have to. A lot of companies don't. Here's a question. If you could buy, this is from the chat. Also have a question from about Nelnet earnings. We're doing a full episode on that, so watch out for that. It'll be the next one to drop in your feed on Wednesday. But here's the question from Zach. If you could buy only one company and hold forever, what would it be? Google might be the one for me. Well, it always depends on price. At this moment, Google's not a, it's not a, I don't think it's a bad bet.
Does a hold forever really depend on price?
Yeah.
If you're holding for 50 years,
yeah,
price matters. I don't think your entry point matters that much. You're probably going to get, you're going to get whatever the returns on capital were.
Nah, at a point.
It's 50 years.
Yeah, people have run the math on this. Munger was kind of a little bit of an exaggerator when it came to that. It's a good philosophy, but when people were like, run the math, you can have a difference between like a 6% return versus a 12%, which is absolutely huge. So yeah, I think if I'm, I think,
ooh, I mean, if it's like on extremes, yes. But if you're like for Google, for example, if you're holding it forever, I don't think the returns will be that different paying today's multiple versus paying 15 times earnings. It might, yeah, it's going to be better, obviously.
Could be a little better.
But it's not going to be that steep over 50 years.
Hey, well, what do we got? What's the, because what are you at, like 4.5 times yield versus a 6.6% yield? Yeah, I know it's growing, but
in 10 years, they could be doing $1 trillion in operating income, 20 years or whatever.
Yeah. And
you laugh now, it's very possible that in 20 years, they're doing $1 trillion in operating income.
Yeah. Someone says, Matt H., welcome back. We're back to holding forever stage of the market. Yeah, this
that's a fun experiment. Which
you mentioned, you had a tweet, and I always use the tweets that do well as basically, okay, people want to hear us talk about it on the show. You said, feel like I'm running a little dry on ideas. What's a stock I should look into? I'm open to anything. I didn't look at all the replies, but I'm curious, what were some things that interest you?
The bummer here is that a lot of people just replied with the ticker, and I was hoping for a little more context. It's usually appreciated. So there was a couple in there that were kind of interesting. One person brought up Boston Omaha, which is a business I know, but just haven't looked at a lot, or haven't looked at or revisited in a while. They've gotten a lot cheaper. The other part, the one that I, what was it? Oh. One of them showed up in my screener last week that was like a high quality small cap, and it's called Simulation Plus. That one actually interested me.
Now. Yeah. Nice revenue growth. 20% CAGR since 2014. Not bad. I saw someone said impressive. Evolution. I've been nervous about it. We looked at them a while ago, but I've been nervous about Evolution for a long time just because if it's a gamble, I think gambling. Online gambling could turn into a real scandal real quick.
Why do you think that?
Because it's
so easy to lose money.
It's like crypto style, like Wild West. Just it's dangerous. That's all I'll say. And they put it like there seems to be minimal regulations. I don't know. If you're older, maybe, you know, in the 40, 50, 60 range, you might not be appreciating this, but younger guys, especially during the pandemic, were all over these things. And it just, and sports gambling too, the same thing, like, feels a bit, maybe, I don't know, tobacco is a good business, you know, all that good stuff, but that part feels risky to me. Clearly Evolution is fantastic unit economics though, so don't know. Seems interesting.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'd say the thing that worries me more about evolution is that I just don't really understand the competitive landscape. Who else can replicate what they're doing? Do big casinos do this in-house? What do the relationships look like with those casinos? I just don't understand those relationships. Maybe that just takes time to learn, and I could probably dig in a little deeper. But I don't know. There were a lot of attractive-looking companies from the replies, so I'll have to dig through them this weekend.
Someone said Nubank.
Oh, NU Holdings, yeah. Like the South American bank?
Yeah.
Okay. This is maybe lazy thinking, but it feels like every few years, a new South American fintech is like the big thing. And then there's some scandal and returns are poor. And I just feel like I've seen too many people get burnt by South American fintechs that I don't really trust it.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to
international investing. And I don't even know anything about it.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to international investing. I'm not opposed to investing in emerging markets that are a little sketchier from a just kind of a business, you know, perspective. But financials and fintech is a lot tougher, I would say.
Let's revisit this, Zach. Question: if you could only buy one company and hold it forever, what would it be?
That's a great. What are the qualifications you're looking for? Well, I'm looking for a management team that I think will be there a long time that I trust. So, like one that I know, or not know, but I have high confidence in, will probably be around in 15 to 20 years, at least that. Or they're setting up a culture of success. I'm looking for not an extreme valuation, and I'm looking for something I think doesn't have major downside. And I honestly think no, that is the one for me. Kind of our baby Berkshire.
All right. And we're going to be talking about them next week. So for anyone that wants to know more about them, there you go.
What's yours? What do you got? Anything come to mind? I know my answer is boring, but that's what it would be.
I'd say maybe Visa or MasterCard. The only concern with me there is that it's more susceptible to change, those industries, as opposed to something that owns like big physical assets. There's also, I'd be a little reluctant to do any banks, but a company like JP Morgan has certainly withstood the test of time, and they're pretty, I think, critical to America. So as long as you believe America is going to be around in this forever holding period, I think JP Morgan will be there too. But
it's a good one. Yeah.
Big banks can fail. So
yeah.
Banks can turn fast. That's the only problem.
That is true. Nintendo's a good one too, I think.
I like the IP, but I don't know if that'd be my hold forever. I don't think he'd get that good of returns. Gonna be honest.
We'll see.
Unless the Switch is forever. If the Switch is forever, maybe.
Yeah, they can never come up with another good thing to sell. Well,
just saying, if you're losing capital or if you're losing money for 3 or 4 years and then they have a hit, that's a problem. You gotta. If this Nintendo investment is gonna work from here, you gotta believe that some iteration of the Switch is going to be popular in 5 years, right?
Well, Neversell, I don't know. Let's see, what's the market cap today? Let me pull it up quick. Probably like 60 billion. 65, wow. Yeah, it's a little more expensive. Okay, so enterprise value is about 50. How much cash do I think they're going to generate over the next 40 years?
You know what? Let me swap my pick. 200,
300 billion? I don't know. A lot. I think they're going to generate a lot.
I'm changing.
No matter if they have a couple of bad years.
Home Depot. My final answer. Punch it in. I think Home Depot. I see no reason why they won't be around in 10 or 20 years. They've got economies of scale. The industry, unlike an O'Reilly or an AutoZone, is less likely to get disrupted potentially. And it's well run. So I think I'm okay with that. Lowe's maybe even. The only problem is Lowe's is a little more heavily levered, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Home Depot's probably a good one not to not lose money, right? Probably a good bet to say that there will be positive returns, but...
Or Amazon. I mean...
maybe not. I mean, have you seen where the stock is lately? It's up like 100% in the last 12 months. Amazon would have been my choice a year ago, that's for sure. We had someone else tell you pot stocks as a good idea. I think that's interesting. No one talks about those anymore. Sector's totally bombed out. Could be interesting, but yeah.
Something keeps me away.
There's a lot of uncertainties with those stocks. Yeah, for sure. All right. Other topic. Let's see. Do we have any questions? Oh, yeah. Okay. Let's see. A lot of stuff on Nintendo. Yeah, someone said, will anyone be reinventing their house in the metaverse? Yeah. Good jokes, everyone. Okay. My topic, or the next one, unless you have anything, was I did a thread on IAC. Stock seems pretty cheap to me here. I don't know. I know when we look at this one, I'm always more optimistic than you are. But I'm curious your thoughts. The X out. Both MGM and Angie are trading at fair value, where MGM has a decent earnings multiple, but seems to be a high quality business. Angie trades at like nothing because, well, it's done quite terribly. EV is about $1 billion and or a little more than a billion. And I kind of think this, like, they're going to start generating a lot of cash.
Don't say the words.
They're going to start.
Don't say the sum of the parts is worth more than the valuation. Well, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty obvious, but they're going to start generating a good amount of cash here. And
you think?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, where? I mean, the search one, that's the declining business, but that generates a good amount of cash. And then Dotdash Meredith, it's going to generate a good amount of cash this year.
Has it turned the corner yet?
Yeah.
I honestly haven't looked that closely at it.
Yeah, so the site visits are up. And
I mean,
as advertising's going well. Yeah. I mean, they use adjusted EBITDA, so you got to kind of make your own numbers in your head. But these aren't capital intensive businesses, so it's not the end of the world. But yeah, I think that just starts generating a lot of cash. And, you know, Turo won't IPO, but we'll see. I should say, full disclosure, I do own shares. And
would you rather see Huddle IPO or Turo?
It's Huddle. Because Turo, I already know generally what it's worth. I'd like to see Huddle's financials.
I'm looking at the earnings right here for IAC. So yeah, net earnings, income's tough. That doesn't, yeah.
Yeah, nope. And they're one that's, it's a tough screen. Kind of got to just go through everything yourself.
I just don't have that much belief in Dotdash Meredith. And maybe it doesn't matter at this price, but I don't think that collection of, it's all websites now, right? They got rid of a lot of the print. I just don't think they're that valuable.
You don't think Investopedia is one of the best businesses in the world? Yeah, that's a fair point. They've been around. I mean,
it might be the biggest one, but what are the other ones? Yeah.
No, Investopedia wouldn't be the biggest, although they probably get good ad rates on it since it's investing. They have, People, All Recipes, Better Homes and Garden, The Spruce, Travel and Leisure, Food and Wine, Martha Stewart website, Southern Living. And it kind of makes sense where I honestly think that they'll do fine in an AI world if people are worried about authenticity with websites and auto-generated content. Because if you go to these brands, you know that a person tested these products, a person is writing this, a person reviewed this, a real person is writing all this stuff, maybe with the help of AI, but they're the ones testing these products, and they're almost perfect advertisements for e-commerce, product placement, and all that good stuff.
How much of this attention do you think has been lost to YouTube and TikTok?
No, that's a good point. But yeah. What's interesting
about some of those niche services, and it feels like a lot of the people trying to build businesses like that today, you do it on these big distribution platforms like a YouTube and a TikTok.
You're talking about review type stuff, keeping reviews up with the niche industry. Yeah. Where video is replacing the search results.
Yeah.
Yeah. They bought Meredith for, I believe, $3 billion. Or maybe it was 2.5. And clearly that probably could be significantly less if they did it today. So it was a bad bet, but if you're going to go through their big bets over the last 4 to 5 years, you got Care.com, Turo, MGM, and then Meredith. They're 3 out of 4 of creating value. So I guess Care is not the best business, but definitely got it at a cheap price.
Yeah, Matt H says, next year I hope you aren't saying you get their MGM stake and everything else for free.
Yeah.
I do. When I first heard that, I was that kind of thesis where it's like, if you value this and this at whatever, you get everything else for free. But now that is my quickest turn off to a new investment. Because I just don't love some of the parts.
I don't mind.
I like a sum of the parts if it can turn into operating earnings. If the combined business is generating good operating income. But if it's just a collection of different investments and some spotty assets, I'm a little reluctant.
Yeah, and that could be why IAC's done quite poorly recently, as the earnings were negative for a while. And I think 2024... they turn positive, but yeah, we'll see. TBD. Question from someone, and that's a good time to do a tease. Says, curious if you all are more or less interested in Coupang after your interview with The Synopsis, or otherwise known as Speedwell Research. Say that came out Wednesday of last week. Go check YouTube, Spotify, Apple, and you can listen to that fantastic interview. I'd say it's a company I already knew fairly well. It's one that I own. So I say it came out about the same, where I came up more confident in the management team and how they've created a good value proposition, but it gave way better insight into the big competitive threats that are out there in the East Asian e-commerce landscape.
Yeah, I'd say I probably came away more bullish or optimistic about the business. It really feels like they have the most unique position in e-commerce there, because no one can really replicate that logistics footprint that they built out, which I think we've seen it with Amazon. Everything comes back to that advantage when you're an e-commerce player. Being able to fulfill those orders quicker than everyone else, it's such an advantage. So I like it, although the stock is up a lot since we prior to the episode, prior to the earnings, I think the stock's probably up 15 or 20%. So kind of a bummer, but
yeah, but it's not too bad. I mean, still bombed out pretty badly from the IPO.
I have a question for you here.
Okay.
I moved money over from my bank account to my Roth IRA.
Nice.
Got $1,000 available in cash. I bought a little bit of, maybe it's not good to disclose it yet because it was recent. I bought a little bit of something, and now I'm looking what to do with $1,000. I kind of want it to be something that isn't already in my portfolio.
Yeah, and full disclosure for everyone, yeah, I would say we would follow the same guidelines that the Motley Fool gives out, which is if you're going to buy something, it has to be either 2 days for or 2 days after you talk about it publicly. So we follow those rules. We don't want to be seen as any sort of, like, you know, the scammy pumper and dumpers. That's not what we try to do. Especially if we're going to talk bullish on something, we'll make sure we never buy it right before something releases, for sure. But what should you do with $1,000? People are going to groan, and that's why I think it's an opportunity. MTCH Match Group, unless it's up a lot today for some reason. It is. It seems to just go down and not never go up. We're at $34 yeah, a share. True. And market cap's about $9 billion. They can retire 10% of their shares outstanding going forward at this price. They got a little bit 10%. Of debt. What cash flow will be well over $1 billion this year from their guide. Yeah, the SBC. But SBC is like, you can retire $900 million and still have that SBC, like net, you know.
Yeah, but they're not going to do all of it. They're not going to use all of their net income to retire shares because it's going to be they've got debt. Well, I guess the debt will have been paid, but they even said they're aiming for half, right?
Oh, that's their minimum. But if there's no more else, yeah.
Match Group, I don't know. I want something outside the portfolio. I already own it.
Okay. Let's look at my watch list. I had some people reach out about Sprouts at shorts, and that it made me look at the stock, and it's done quite well. I know you don't like Take Two, and I kind of soured on them. What about, I am seeing British American Tobacco at a price of $29.50. Dividend yield definitely above probably 10% now. What are your thoughts? All right,
that might be the one. Or that could be the one. I own Philip Morris already, so probably not that. But a dividend yield over 10%. Yeah. As long as that dividend's still going to be there, I'll take it.
Yeah. That is true. Yeah. I mean, I feel like right now, hide in tobacco until the boom, bubble, whatever happens, goes away. That could not be the worst strategy.
Especially hide in tobacco forever.
Yeah. And it seems like Altria will never go, it just trades at $40. Philip Morris just trades at $90. And British American Tobacco now just trades at $30. And it's never going to change. But even if that happens, you know, you'll get a 10% bond each year from a good old BTI. All right.
Plus,
a couple minutes long.
If you're not a fan of cigarettes, like personally, this is a great sort of emotional hedge because you say, hey, at least they're paying me money.
I know. I feel like the biggest haters of cigarettes, which there are a lot out there, I'm not a fan of them too. My grandma died of lung cancer. You should be the ones buying these stocks because then you can take the profits and do what you want with them because you're the ones harvesting the profits. You should be the one to do that.
You're like, hey, and at least they're my customers.
Yeah, I don't understand the ESG narrative around that where it's like, I don't want to buy this stock. And it's like, great. This is like, you can feel that, but there's two pieces, you know, the two pieces of paper meme. Like there's a world where you don't buy cigarettes and the world cigarette stocks and the world that there is. It changes nothing about the actual physical reality.
These aren't they're not issuing new shares. You're not actually giving money to the company.
Yeah.
It's just you are just taking receipt of ownership from someone else who's probably not affiliated with the company whatsoever.
Yeah. The only one I would feel icky about is if I was a venture capitalist in Juul. Or those disposables. Those one, they're schemey. All right. Well, we went a couple minutes long there. I think that's a great way to end it. Thank you to everyone for listening. We had a comment here in the live chat that said the coupon discussion was great. So appreciate that. A lot of people have been listening. And if you haven't listened, it's a very interesting overview from a great research team over at Speedwell Research. Let's hit the disclosure. We are not financial advisors. Anything we say on Chit Chat Stocks is not formal advice or recommendation. Ryan, I, or any podcast guest may hold securities discussed in this podcast, may have held them in the past, and may buy, sell, or hold them in the future. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. These go live 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursdays every week, and we'll see you next time.